You are listening to My Art Broker Talks. My Art Broker connects buyers and sellers of blue chip prints and editions, specialising in original prints and multiples, in particular pop, contemporary and urban art. Hosted by Charlotte Stewart.
Today on our podcast, we have Angela Roldan, the Global Sale Director of Art Money. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Charlotte. How are you? Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Angela, we met maybe middle of last year and started talking about the opportunities for our clients with Art Money and really started talking about this market and realized how much more we had to say to each other and the considerations for clients and collectors. Could you start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your background and where you are now?
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. I'm currently a global sales director here at Art Money. We're helping collectors buy art by allowing them to pay over time. I was at Artsy for about 4 years, where I was managing gallery partnerships, working with our European clients. So getting galleries involved, going through their digital strategies, supporting them. It was a great, very interesting time, especially as we went into COVID and through that whole lockdown period. Before that, I was at Artfinder, which is actually sort of, you'd say, the other spectrum of the market, which is affordable art directly from artists. And I worked both in London and opened their first US office in Miami. Really, my focus has always been in sales, business development, in art, supporting buyers, supporting collectors, supporting sellers, whether it's dealers, auction houses, platforms, galleries, through the use of technology.
And now at Art Money, can you tell us a little bit, for those that don't know, what Art Money does?
Yeah, absolutely. Art Money, as I said, help collectors buy art by allowing them to pay over time. So we have a very straightforward proposal, which is take the art you want home today, but you can pay in 10 months, 10 payments. I think what we're doing, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel. It's payment plans have existed since the Medicis, but what we're doing is just making it easy for buyers. So
how does that work? So let's say I want to buy an artwork from a gallery locally to me. It costs perhaps £20,000, and I would like not to put all cash that I've got right now into that artwork. Well, how I approach you, and what's the process?
If you want to buy a piece for £20,000, usually the gallery will be partnered with us already. If they're not, we will approach them. And what you do, you pay a 10% deposit. So that'll be £2,000. And then you're paying your next nine payments. So it's always split in 10 payments over the next 9 months. The beauty of it is you can take the work home today. So that's another thing. For our buyers, really, we always say this, it's not about affordability. It's about psychology. If you're buying something for £50,000, it's a lot easier to pay £5,000 today and take the work home and pay it over time than to pay £50,000 today. It really removes the guilt. It removes that, like, ooh, am I making the right decision, et cetera. And the same thought process happens when someone's buying something for $50,000 or $90,000 than if they're buying something for $2,000.
Mm-hmm. And what about investors? Are a lot of these people buying on the primary market for passion alone, or is it the right platform and process to use for something that maybe might return them something in 5-10 years' time?
Absolutely. We have a whole, because of the price ranges that we operate in, you know, which is basically from £1,000 to around £100,000, we have a plethora of types of buyers. But, you know, this is a great tool as well if you're looking at a long-term investment, paying it over time, make your money work elsewhere, you know, but you can still have the art and enjoy it today, or buy when that opportunity shows up. Oftentimes, you know, the right work appears at the wrong time. So you might have the money, but you might not have the liquidity at that moment.
Yeah.
So this is a great solution.
Let's talk about trends. What trends have you seen through maybe the last 8 years in this collective market?
Yeah, so it's been really interesting, especially, as you say, going through these different ends of the market. You know, at Artfinder, we were it was a marketplace selling directly from artists. The buyer would speak directly to the artist. You know, it's a lot. It's an, I always like to say it was a bit of a gateway drug you know, nobody starts buying art at 20,000. Most people, they start little by little. And what we saw there is that, you know, at that end, you know, collectors really are interested in that story about the, to speak to the artist. You know, there's a lot of, there's a big importance on the social media persona, online persona of the artist. So there's a lot of weight on that. Then going at Artsy, you know, when I was there, when they started developing their e-commerce side, which was really interesting. You know, one thing that I'm seeing even from then until now, you know, this is from 4 or 5 years ago till now, 2023, is just collectors are demanding more from sales, from sellers. Gone are the days where you know, the seller has all the power in the negotiation and, you know, can get and chooses, you know, I sell to you, I don't sell to you. I mean, there's really only a handful of galleries and dealers who can do that right now because, you know, the works might be in demand or they might have a wait list. But, you know, more people are seeing art in, as something they want to start dipping their toes in. And so they're demanding more things. So they're demanding payment plans, the ability to spread the cost, information available immediately. You know, enough of this, like, who's the artist or who do I ask or what's the price transparency, ease of shipping, ease of storage, you know, things that we see in other industries that are completely normal. People, collectors are starting to demand this.
I completely agree with that. But do you think that's just a case of the world becoming a more digital, immediate satisfaction space? Or do you think that's something that's unique to the art market?
I think it's a reflection of the world, but I think the art market is 15 years behind in the way that, you know, 15 years ago, for example, compared to the fashion industry, you wouldn't even think of buying a pair of shoes online. That's insane. But nowadays, you know, you just order whatever you want online, gets home. You know, people dread going into high streets or into center of town. So I think one of the things that is really interesting is that more art businesses are looking to tap into a group of people that traditionally haven't been interested in art. And they're really latching onto that, focusing on that education aspect, which is important.
Yeah. So,
as well as, you know, giving information to collectors, it's also this education aspect, not in a patronizing way, but things like podcasts, as we're doing right now.
You were just touching there on how important it is now for buyers to have more information and more education in this space than they've ever had before, and how people are demanding it. And I think that's really true. And you touched before on transparency, and something like Art Money works as a partner with someone, right? So having someone else who's kind of financially involved in that purchase, there's almost a kind of trust element there as well, isn't there? That's very important. In 2008, you know, which is probably an eon ago now in the world of digital, and also COVID obviously made these old institutions have to digitalize and give people sort of more free flowing information that they couldn't get one to one with a specialist in a gallery or in a viewing room. You have buyers now who, yes, expect more information, yes, expect transparency, but also you still have those old brands that hold this huge trust element. And when you talk about being able to buy something online, or being able to work with a partner that is, you know, that has no bricks and mortar involved in that transaction, there is a huge landscape for people who work with these online businesses. And as soon as these online businesses create this ecosystem around these online buyers, it's a lot more powerful than what some of these older institutions and high street galleries can do for clients. Would you agree with that?
Totally. And again, I always, I do want to reference back again to the fashion industry, and we're seeing these same patterns. You know what? Bricks and mortar, you know, traditionally was what was needed for a solid gallery, or so for a gallery to be taken seriously, or a seller, or a buyer, or an auction house even. But now we're seeing, you know, as in the fashion industry, who's one of the biggest fashion retailers? Net-a-Porter. They don't have one store, you know. So I think if you create a brand of trust where you have availability of information, ease of buying, I think we touched upon this earlier. I don't like the term democratizing the art world. I think it's been very bastardized, but where you create a place where people can access information and build a brand of trust, I think those are the players who will thrive. You know, this transparency, there's all the information's out there. It's just how to find it. So if you're gatekeeping the information, someone will go to another platform, another seller, another dealer.
And I think as new collectors enter, I mean, I am also not a fan of this concept of being able to democratize the art world. I mean, we are talking about a passion asset. We are talking about something that is not a, it's a want, not a need.
It's a luxury.
It's an absolute luxury. And I think, you know, I think, well, so my art broker deal with Artworks, whilst we work with partners on works that are of a lower value, we you know, we deal with artworks that are £10,000 and above. You know, it is for a niche audience. I mean, being a company like Art Money that allows access to that space, and, you know, particularly where we work in the secondary market, where artworks have a value associated with them. And it's so interesting how people are, you know, you touched on the fashion Nessa Porter, which now has its own secondary market space as well, where you can track the value of your fashion, which, you know, because this is what people want and they need it. But I think what's amazing about companies like Art Money that can work with online businesses really, really well is that you are bringing in a new generation of, and it's not necessarily by age when I say a new generation, a new type of collector that doesn't want to walk into perhaps a stuffy auction house. They don't want the labor. Yeah. Of having to wait for a sale, you know, will they, won't they buy it? And giving people access and education, it seems to have reaped rewards over the last sort of 2-3 years. And actually, I think probably, I mean, I don't know what was COVID like? What was that year like? It was Artsy, you were there then, weren't you?
Yes, I was at Artsy during the COVID years. Mm. It was fascinating in terms, I mean, I worked directly with galleries, so with sellers. But it was fascinating, you know, it was galleries I had spoken to previously, pre-COVID, who had said to me, well, why do I need to be on Artsy? And I'm not saying Artsy, but just in general, like, why do I need a website? I've got a gallery in St. James. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. And now, you know, they're rumbling on and you see, you know, you get even all the mega galleries, you know, your White Cubes, your Gagosians, you know, they, the ones who like thrived were the ones who were ahead of the curve and realized the importance of digital and information and realized, you know, it's not just a matter of, you're not going to have people walking through the door anymore.
And what are the common pitfalls that collectors come up against when they perhaps start out collecting?
I think the number one is not doing your homework or not doing your research, not relying on the right people. I think there's, you know, we hear all these success stories online about these enormous gains, or, you know, John Smith from Idaho found a painting in his attic and it turned out to be a Rembrandt, you know, like that. people, you know, think in terms of quick gains. So I think the main thing, you know, that people are really, people that don't do well is those who just jump into whatever trend without understanding. And I think what's key for that is finding the right partners and the right people and, you know, going to the experts. I mean, I know you guys at My Art Broker, you know, have people that are experts in specific artists. You know, you need to really get the right advice, especially in a world where there's so many fakes and reproductions, etc.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, and that goes back to transparency, doesn't it? And being able to give people the trust through education. How much would you advise someone to use an art advisor separately from a gallery?
So I always think it just depends on, it's a matter of putting the work in. So, you know, how much work do you want to put in? You know, are you going to spend hours looking at, you know, previous data and auction records and understanding and really doing your homework? Or is it something that you want to pass on? It's like with everything in life, you know, time is money. So if this is a passion of yours and you're interested and, you know, you can do it on your own, mm-hmm. but by all means, I do encourage everyone, you know, don't just leave it to yourself. Talk to people, go to events, have conversations, have discussions online or whether it's in person.
And how important is it to see the artwork in person before purchasing? In the context of this digital art world, you know, which is actually... where a lot of people come from when they, you know, when they start thinking about purchasing something online, you know, do you need to have that in-person moment with an artwork?
I don't think it's essential to see it online, to see it in person anymore. The beauty of what we have, you know, now in 2023, we've got such great technology that like you can see the dimensions, you can see the work in situ, you can even upload a photo of your living room somewhere and put it if you're going to hang it in your house, as long as the information is, as long as you're buying from a reputable seller, you know, and you know that the work in terms of authenticity and condition, that is fine. I don't think it's essential to see it online. The beauty, to see it in person, the beauty is that as opposed to a pair of jeans where you buy online and then you try them on and it don't fit well, art will always look better in person. So you'll always be surprised.
I always advise clients, having spent, you know, the best part of 16 years in the secondary market, to not buy a primary market, because I believe that there's only a handful of people that can make the really, really great decisions. And obviously, if you go to a great gallery, there's much more opportunity to make the right decision. But the secondary market always allows you to be able to track the value of an artist market. So that, you know, and this kind of relates back to being able to finance art properly. I believe that collecting is a kind of, it's a carousel. And, you know, that's the kind of joy of it. Very few people buy something in their early collecting years and hold on to it until, you know, pass it on to their family. It's very much a kind of organic journey that you go on.
When people are like, where do I start with collecting? Like, oh, go secondary market. I think it really depends on what your purpose is. You know, there's the emotional collection. There's the stuff you buy to get a return. There's stuff you buy, pieces you buy, you know, because they just catch your eye aesthetically, and that's perfectly fine. So I think in terms of what collectors, you know, should be thinking about in primary versus secondary market is, you know, primary market, there's a higher return, there's a higher risk. You know, the percentage of artists that actually have a resale value is close to nil. Mm-hmm. But then again, if the return on that is, you know, I love this artist, I love to see the journey of them grow, I love to see this work in my wall, I enjoy it, you know, that's a different type of return instead of financial. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for some sort of financial return, or at least to break even, you know, obviously secondary market, the beauty of it is, you know, artists have a track record. It's easy to use data to evaluate the potential direction of the market. So would always advise in that sense. But I think, for buyers, it's just evaluating, you know, how much, what are my reasons for buying this and why?
And what are those reasons normally? What is the main driver for people, particularly at the moment in perhaps a more difficult economic climate?
I still think that, you know, as corny as it can sound, art brings joy, you know. So it's totally fine to buy something because you love it, you know, because I think a lot of times new buyers are scared of buying something because, is it okay to like this? Do I have the approval? Is it okay to like this, you know, flower? You know, am I going to be judged? You know, I think that's the biggest impediment, people not trusting their taste and like. But then again, you can also use the art market, and you can also use art as a vehicle. So, you know, you want to you're following an artist's trends and their growth and their increase in value. You know, that could be a good move for you if you have some extra cash that you want to put into something, and that's going to give you more joy than just seeing a stock in your computer.
I agree. I mean, I think we get as my art broker, we get slightly misjudged in that way, and I often see you know, certain galleries or online platforms comparing the value of art and the growth of return against something like, you know, the FTSE 100 or the FTSE 500 even, and
yeah.
It doesn't work, you know. I mean, we often, there are people who are in it purely for investment, and when you see a market bubble like the Banksy market did, for instance, in 2020, you know, COVID was just like the perfect landscape for that market to do that. That's not what it's about, because it's always about buying something that you love, and then you're never really taking a risk. However, our ability to be able to show you value data against an artist market, and with prints and editions, they're comparables and they're series. And I don't think people understand enough about certain areas of the art market where they can really actually take that risk down. And it's really interesting because what you touched on when you said people's biggest concern is their taste. Because I have to say, I don't know whether clients don't let that on to me, but and it will make because I'm dealing with artists that are already, you know, incredibly noteworthy and have a huge following and audience. I think it's really interesting that you encounter people who aren't sure whether they're making the right decision aesthetically, because from our point of view, it's always people who they love it. They know they love it, that there is a huge certainty in that. But maybe that's also to do with the depth of purchase and you know, because I suppose if you're buying something for £1,000, it is more decorative.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of what you're saying, that maybe clients don't lead you on to this, is what you guys are dealing with, which is prints in the secondary market with established stores. You've got that data comparable, so even if somebody doesn't like your taste, you can still back it up with numbers.
Yeah,
you know. So it's kind of like a, you know, in your face, like, if you don't like what I like
as an excuse, it's like, I know. Yeah. I hate it, but, you know, it's going to return me something.
Buyers, yeah, they're scared. And they're also scared to, that's why they need the validity and the pedigree. And again, I'm going to go back to fashion. This is exactly why, like, I don't know, like logos are very attractive and people love logos, you know, and they can show that this is a logo, like a logo handbag or a logo belt or something like that. But it's just because it has that validity, you know, it reassures them. And then I think the same thing happens with these known artists, you know, that already have a track record and people can recognize, you know, you might not like my Banksy, but you know it's a Banksy. So, yeah. You know, that gives that reassurance.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think when you're talking about, you know, it kind of goes back to democratizing the art market and what that really means, because, you know, so the Affordable Art Fair has this incredible brand behind it, with these established galleries. And when you go somewhere and you buy something, you can't help but explain where you bought it from and why you bought it. You know, it's the collecting story as much as it is purchasing the artwork. If you could collect, I mean, you do collect already by the sounds of it, and you've bought pieces yourself. What have you bought? Can you share that with us? And why?
I'm one of those buyers who is very much buys with the heart and not with the mind. And in fact, you know, working when I go to art fairs or when I'm speaking to galleries and stuff, you know, I just let go of everything, and it's my heart that guides it. So, you know, my husband often says to me, you know, remember, you're there to work, you're not there, you're there to make money, not to spend money. So yes, I'm one of those buyers problem. That doesn't that's just buying purely on inertia, if you want to call it.
Yeah, I think also, you know, it's the difference as well when we're talking about artists like we work with, where you're kind of buying an art. You know, if you're buying a Warhol or buying a Banksy, you're buying a brand as well. So it's almost like the design. Oh, yeah. It's the designer end, isn't it? You know, you might go to when you're buying something from the Affordable Art Fair, you're buying particularly if you're buying direct from artists, if to use the fashion analogy, you're buying something that is it's like going to a really lovely boutique that's like a small company. Which, you know, puts their heart and soul into everything. You know, you're buying a Warhol, you're buying a Banksy, you're buying it like designer, pop culture, yeah, brand level. And it's totally
it's exactly what you said. Boutique, put your heart in, small business versus buying from LVMH. And, you know, nobody thinks about Bernard Arnault when they're buying a, you know, a Fendi handbag or something like that, you know.
And it's interesting, the series that really capture people's eyes, because you know, there are some Banksys, for instance, that have less wall appeal. You know, there's Toxic Mary, there's Napalm, but you know it's a Banksy, and that's what. And then there are some that are slightly less famous. I mean, you know, like if you have a girl with a balloon on your wall, a lot of people don't believe it's a genuine article, because that
it's even real. Yeah,
reproduced so many times. It's kind of like I guess it's like the Louis Vuitton handbag, you know, like you have to wear it at the right time, otherwise people think it's a fake. It's kind of,
and you have to be the right person,
you have to be the right person. So, but I think what's interesting is in the more established markets, there is a real trend at the moment of works that aren't the obvious. So, you know, you look at the Warhol's market and works like Marilyn and the Soup Can, they're still incredibly popular and the demand is still there. And to be honest with you, if you're looking for a pure investment, buy those big, big, never going to go out of fashion.
Recognizable.
But what is interesting is that the more educated people are becoming through being able to have access to knowledge around these artists' portfolios is works like Ladies and Gentlemen, which, you know, it was produced by Warhol in like 1970 and actually discusses, you know, gender identity in a way that feels incredibly before its time. The Endangered Species series, which again, so I think it's really interesting. I mean, you know, there's this kind of concept that we throw around as people in the art world that, you know, buy with your heart, buy what you love. But actually, there's just so many different reasons and things that go into making that first decision. And I think it's just so different for every person, isn't it?
Totally. And I think also part of it, and I think, especially now that you mentioned, you know, the endangered species, because I'm actually looking for one, not for me personally, but for someone. I think part of what's exciting about the art world and the art market and buying art is that thrill, that treasure hunt thrill. So I think, you know, people forget that it also has to be fun. And, you know, there's again this need to, you know, as things become too popular, you know, your Marilyn's and your Campbell, you know, you go to another niche of that artist, you know.
Yes.
So, and I think that makes it really fun and interactive and you know, everybody wants to always feel like they have something unique.
Yeah. And also I think everybody wants to feel like they connect to something. And it's very easy to look at a Marilyn and, you know, it's something that's been reproduced so many times and just feel like you went for the obvious choice. Whereas, you know, having a, you know, a Last Supper, actually either by Damien Hirst or by Warhol, either of those in your kitchen, you know, like it's really great. You buy into an artist, you buy into their thought process and I think that, you know, it's no longer, whilst we've sort of smashed the concept of art, you know, democratic art place, there is so many opportunities now to be able to own art. I mean, you know, we don't do it. We do 100% ownership, but there's obviously fractional buying.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's pretty sad because you don't get to hold and love and keep the artwork. You know, it's stored somewhere. But, you know, being able to set
up. It's one of the reasons. There's many reasons to buy. That's one of them,
You know, to be able to give. Are there other companies other than Art Money that are doing, that are sort of, would you say, are at the forefront of access to the market?
So I think there's, you know, online platforms. Anything online is giving access because of location. So I'm a huge supporter of platforms that offer this. I also think that sometimes we, you know, anything to do with education. So even it might sound silly, but, you know, you're starting to collect, you're starting to go and do a MoMA course on Coursera. It's completely free and it'll give you an entry point to that market. There's a specific one about, you know, pop art and Warhol and stuff. So if you're just starting in that, educate yourself. So I think there's so much information out there. There's no excuse nowadays to not know.
So much information, but there's also too much information, isn't there?
Like, yeah, so that's why you have to know how to filter, you know? And obviously, my number one always, you know, my number one piece of advice always is, if it's too good, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. You know, I mean, if you think, you know, I remember, and oftentimes it's just, again, back to educating yourself. We'd have at Artsy, you know, so I worked with a couple of galleries who did secondary market works, you know, Banksy's, Warhol's, and Bader's, you know, very similar to your profile. And they'd get inquiries from buyers saying like, oh, how much is this piece, this Banksy? And obviously the gallery would say, I don't know, 200, 300,000. And, oh, sorry, I'm looking for something for my 13-year-old's birthday. And it's kind of like, you're not going to get them real Banksy, you know? You're in the wrong, to educate yourself.
How small, do you only work with works of £1,000 and upwards? How small a purchase can you make and still work with Art Money?
So the minimum we'll do is £1,000. And that's £1,000 in total of the invoice. So oftentimes, many times, buyer might want, if you're buying at the lower end of the market, or you know, directly from an artist, or directly from a smaller gallery, a primary gallery, they might buy two prints for 500, or they might buy a print. You know, what also happens, we see a lot, is someone's buying a print for, say, £700, and they'll often add another print or another work to top it up.
Yeah.
So they might buy something else for 500. So you're 7 + 5, that's 1200. And even though it doesn't make sense, you know, it's just easier, as I said, it's about psychology, not affordability. A lot easier to pay £120 today for 10 months than to pay £1,000.
Yes.
Than to pay £700. So it's about just making it easier. And, you know, for sellers, this is, again, a great tool. It incentivizes buyers to buy at higher prices. It, you know, everybody has a mental budget in mind, whether it's $1,000, $10,000, or $50,000. I guarantee you, you know, if your budget is $30,000, you always fall in love with the £40,000 work.
Yeah.
Always. That's by default. So, you know, doing that jump,
we
that 30% jump is hard. But hey, actually, $4,000 a month, I can do that.
I think where Art Money would work really well with some of our clients is we quite often have people enter the market space wanting one thing from an artist portfolio. You know, they've fallen in love with something and they know they can't have it. So they're like, can you get me what? Can you find something that's similar? I want that one, but I can't have it. So, and they tend to sort of hold off. And then actually, exactly as you say, you know, the ability to be able to go, oh, actually, this feels to me like less of a commitment.
And removing the guilt.
And what's the point of buying something that isn't the one, you know? buy the one.
Don't
that's
settle.
Don't sell out. That's just, you know, that don't settle. Absolutely. Well, really, really interesting. Thank you, Angela. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Is there a premium involved in using Art Money? Like, what do I pay on top of what I would normally pay if I just paid out straight away to the gallery?
No. So yeah, for buyers, it's, you know, 10 months, 10 payments, no interest. So right. It's very straightforward. You'll know exactly what you're paying every month. Everybody can divide by 10. So it's very easy. We're about making things simple. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, reach out to us. We're always happy to support you, to help you, you know, with your purchases. We're, as I said at the beginning, we're all sort of art people. We understand. We want to help you. So, you know, we have clients who come to us who know what they want. We have clients who come to us who have no idea, but we're always open to help. And it's a great way to buy the art you love and get it today.
Brilliant. Thank you, Angela. Thank you so much.
Thank you.